Welcome to your future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you. At CEJA, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. CEJA's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the CEJA banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Dr. Brian Halverson is one of the UK's leading holistic dentists. He is the author of Great Teeth for Life and lectures widely to the public and to health practitioners. Brian is passionate about providing preventative information to guide us through all the stages of our lifetime. To find out more about Brian, go to www.brianhalverson.com. And now here is Dr. Brian Halverson.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone.
Hi, Brian here, the integrated dentist for UK Health Radio. Today, I have the great pleasure to introduce a member who is not a dentist, but he's been intricately involved in dentistry for the last, well, over 20 years. Julian English is chief editor of a magazine called Dentistry, but the magazine group has many other arms to it. Julian, I think, possibly knows more about the dentistry of the in terms of the profession of dentistry and where it's going and where it's been than possibly anybody I know. I can include Julian as a friend of mine, but we just don't see each other enough. Julian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Brian. Thank you.
Julian, what made you sort of take up the role of editor in dentistry?
Brian, I arrived into dentistry by accident. All trained for years and years on a very specific subject and then have a career, but mine was totally opposite to that. I had a friend of a friend. I was working for a well-known mobile phone company, writing press releases in a marketing department, and a friend said, how would you like to work on the other side, work on a dental publication, writing articles and accepting press releases, rather than writing the press releases and asking for them to be accepted? So took the role, and I've been doing it for 22 years, and in that time I've by osmosis learned quite a bit about dentistry. I like to see myself as a jack of all trades, and I have a very broad but shallow knowledge of most areas, and here I am today.
Great, because I think that being a dentist for as long as I have been, I think that one of the problems we have in dentistry is communicating with each other. So that,
yes,
we almost are in our surgeries, and often I know in the practices I've worked in, including my own, that I may have somebody next door to me, but I hardly speak to them from one day to the next. So I think that the need for magazines and ways of communicating between dentists is frankly an essential part of being part of a profession.
Definitely. And we're acutely aware of that on Dentistry Magazine, and we write content. We started putting on courses a few years ago as well for exactly that reason, dentists work in silos, and to get them together and get them talking. And the British Dental Association as well as its own conference and events to try and get dentists together, because often they're so focused on treating patients as well as they can, they never really lift their head up and look at what's around them.
Do you agree that over the last 20 years, there's been some really quantum changes in the profession of dentistry, in the way that we now deliver dentistry to patients?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I'd say since 1990, when there were a few changes from the government in NHS dentistry, introducing a contract, and again in 2006 there was a new contract, and every time there is a change in legislation, there's a change in how dentistry is provided. Back in the day, 20 years ago plus, a patient would go to see a dentist, and that dentist would be totally trusted in their advice. And these days, people are quite happy to seek a second opinion. There's lots more private dentistry goes on than there ever was. In fact, a few years ago, the spend on private dentistry for the first time equaled that on NHS.
Gosh, I never realised
dentistry.
That.
Yeah, 2014. And so dentistry is just delivered in a much different way now. Dentists are expected to sell patient plans, and the patient is very choosy. And there's a lot more competition as well between dentists, which has its positives and negatives, but on the whole, the positives are there for sure.
Julian, what is your view of the corporates? Because obviously I think that now they're becoming quite a major player within the profession.
Yeah, well, 20 years ago, because of a nuance in the law, there were only 28 corporates, and there were not allowed to be any more. So if I came along with several million pounds and wanted to set up a chain of practices, I couldn't. I had to buy one of the 28 companies. But that law was relaxed 10 years ago, and now the number of corporates is growing and growing in dentistry. I think they're about 15%, doing about 20 to 22% of the treatments. Quite a high percentage of NHS dentistry is done through the corporates too, and we're certainly heading in the way that the opticians have, where the individual high street dentist with his own name is dying out, and we're getting many more chains coming together. So we see that growing and growing going into the future.
Yes, I mean, now having sold my own practice and now working for a corporate, I now can see both sides of it. From the public, I have to be honest, I think that the amount of training and backup that the corporates provide often really has got its advantages, so that speaking as an individual, that I can practice dentistry rather than worry about a lot of the compliance and the management, which often used to take away a lot of my focus from actual patient care. Would you agree?
For many people who join corporates, totally agree, yeah. A couple of things there. Many people and dentists join corporates because they don't want to be an entrepreneur. They want to work for someone, and the assurance of that. And they also want to remove the increasing bureaucratic burden that takes them away from what they were trained to do, which is to treat patients as well as they can. So, yeah, many people see it as a liberation almost. And, of course, the corporates, by law and by definition, have to have on their board a majority of dental professionals, so that training, support, understanding is all there. And obviously, dentists have got the Hippocratic Oath too, so all the corporates are sort of bound by this, and there's far less likely to be any problems.
Yes. So this has obviously been a really major change in the practice of dentistry. And in general practice overall, we also have got schemes such as DenPlan, which again has a different philosophy. Could you explain how you would think of a scheme such as DenPlan?
DenPlan and other providers offer a solution for patients. Some patients want to spread the costs and the risk of their dental treatment, and it's not for everyone, but for those who like it, then it really works well. So instead of going to the dentist with pain and having to pay out some unexpected money, then people pay a monthly fee and are able to have their dental treatment covered pretty much within that fee. As I said, it reduces risk, reduces unexpected bills. There's also an insurance element to it, which people enjoy too. And for a percentage of the general public, it really works for them.
Yes, I think the other part which I am attracted by the, call it the capitation schemes, is that because you're paying on a monthly basis, that encourages regular attendance.
Yes.
Put crudely, you want to get your money's worth.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And regular attendance, reducing the cost of treatment and the likelihood of problems can be done very simply by regular attendance at a dentist practice and actually listening to the oral health advice that one's given. Those are the two simplest, easiest steps to avoiding problems in dentistry, for sure.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And with my recent interviews about the importance of mouth health to the overall body, it's often trying to convince people to actually attend regularly, because there is this fear that every time you turn up at the dentist, it's going to be another large bill.
Indeed. But a stitch in time saves nine. To use a well-used phrase there, and regular attendance can easily head off problems that can rapidly multiply and rapidly cause problems. And of course, the dentist is sort of first line of defense and first line of checking for oral cancer and for gum disease, which is linked to heart disease and all sorts of other quite serious medical ailments. So attending the practice and having a regular checkup is strongly recommended.
That's correct. Now, if we look at the subject of where the NHS is going, do you think that the likelihood is that the NHS is going in the right direction from the point of view of, again, I suppose, preventative care?
The NHS is definitely focused on preventive care. It struggles, from what I've seen, to value, because it has to get value for money for the taxpayer, of the preventive care, but it understands that that is the right approach. Definitely getting in there early, sorting out problems before they become expensive and time-consuming is the best way forward, but it's quite hard to justify that to the people with the money, because they like to see treatments, payment for treatments. They also like quite simply to see people coming in with a problem, it gets treated, a fee gets charged. It's all very simple to understand. So we're in a situation at the moment, I believe, certainly from what I've seen of the Department of Health, where they understand preventive is the way forward. They're trying to create a new contract that heavily includes prevention, heavily includes patient education, but we're just not quite over the line with it yet.
But it's obviously in process, which obviously, from my point of view, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners would be regarding as very, encouraging. Is there anything that you could suggest that the public could actually do to try to sort of, I know dentistry often fits on as a low priority for a lot of people, but as a lot of my shows have shown, that in fact it is vitally important for overall health and well-being. Obviously, you're, I know, totally involved with trying to get the message out there to my colleagues, but would you have any suggestions on how we could possibly, get the public to back I won't say a protest, but certainly to look at emphasising more prevention within the health service, because it is still the major provider of dentistry, and obviously for a lot of people is a lower cost option.
Yeah, definitely, and it's heavily used as well, and will continue to be into the future. So I did ask this question of a dentist member of parliament. I said, what can the public do to help push the preventive agenda? And he came up with a great reply, which I didn't think was very practical, but I shall tell you it anyway.
Thank you.
Which was that patients should write to their local MP. So I'm quite sceptical of that, but he said if 10 patients wrote to the local MP in every single constituency, they would force the MPs to raise it in the House of Commons and just force some change on the matter. And all we need is just a body, a weight of enthusiasm for preventive dentistry through Parliament, and that would easily force this new exciting contract full of prevention and full of capitation to actually come in and be implemented.
That does sound, actually, although, as you say, it sounds slightly out there, but I could see that it could work even via people who actually attend practices, and even the practice sort of saying, look, you know, have a leaflet issued. You know, we can help change the system, improve it from the point of view of prevention, but I could see we could use practices as a springboard for that.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, getting on to that subject, I know that the group has been very heavily involved in providing postgraduate education, CPD.
Yes.
Do you have much influence on that in your good self?
Yes. Yeah, I'm involved in it quite heavily in our company. Obviously, the continuing professional development is for dental professionals. It quite simply stops a dentist qualifying in 1950, continuing to use the same treatment ideas and products that were available in 1950. People have to be up to date with all sorts of, you know, the latest technology, the latest treatments, the latest materials, and continuing professional development does that. It does it very well. And it's due to change for next year as well, so we're quite excited about the changes which start in January 2018.
And when was it first introduced?
I think it was 11, 12 years ago.
Okay, I think it was 2001, wasn't it, if I remember rightly?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. We have a magazine that we do. I think it's on its 15th or 16th edition.
Yes.
So sounds about right.
Because I know that your company certainly assisted my good self when we actually were providing postgraduate education back in, I think it was about 2003 and 2004. So, the group, Dentistry, and I think yourself included, was very much encouraging ways that we could get effective communication with the profession. Because as you rightly say, I think that if dentistry is changing, when we're, as a dentist, in an isolated situation, you have one of the vehicles that can actually spread new messages to educate those who, frankly, are not keeping up to date.
Definitely. It's a raison d'etre of the magazine and of the CPD that we provide to keep dentists. And, of course, now hygienists, nurses and technicians, keep them all up to date with the latest technology and the latest techniques to make sure that they can do the absolute best for their patients, and they are doing the absolute best for their patients.
So if you take the role of what I'll call the media within dentistry, What would you say would be your number one priority if you, in a perfect world, you know, what sort of, what would you actually say you would like to be sort of producing? And I think you've achieved a lot of these goals already as a service to dentistry, which to me then reflects into the service that they can provide to the public.
Definitely. I see the number one goal is to challenge the associations, challenge the government, challenge the regulators, all of them, to ensure that they're doing their job. And to provide information that can help dentists to practice dentistry better and easier and cheaper and with less stress. So we try to focus on that all the time, just challenging people, challenging situations, challenging authors to write about the latest products and materials. That's pretty much the role. And it all feeds back to helping dentists to treat patients better.
Absolutely. And also, I think that it is such a significant and role for you to have, and I suppose, frankly, responsibility. And I know from my own experience that I think that you, I can say personally, have brought this type of proactive side of representation to the profession. And as you say, with the ultimate goal of making dentistry more available and increasing the effectiveness, the health effectiveness to the public, I think that it's essential that we have, if I may say, people like your good self, actually with those sort of perspectives in mind.
Oh, it's very kind, but it is the job, as I see it. Obviously, it writes its own job description, and I just wake up every morning and come in and try and do the absolute best that I can to reflect what's happening, to lead change, to campaign, and so on, in order to help dentists and dental professionals. The better informed, the better skilled they are, the better it is for the general public.
Yes, because as you say, I think that challenge is needed. And often we need assistance from your good self and your team, because sometimes we can be too close to the subject and we don't take an overview of what is happening. Whereas I think, the way that you treat it, you look at it from, frankly, both points of view. So that, for example, when certain tiers of, compliance are brought in, hopefully, and I know you do, look at it from the point of view of, are these changes of benefit or are they just creating more burden for the profession?
Yeah, exactly. And currently we've got levels of bureaucracy and compliance that overlap and don't need to. So we're campaigning quite hard with three particular bodies to try and get them to work together to stop this overlap. We've got a situation where if a dentist is naughty, then he can be in trouble with three or four different regulatory bodies, and we really think that should be just the one. So we're campaigning heavily on that, and we're campaigning because the more bureaucracy and pointless overlapping bureaucracy a dentist has to go through, the less time he can spend perfecting his skills, treating patients well, and giving good oral health advice.
I think that's absolutely correct, and I know that it's all done for the right reasons, but as you say, often there is this overlap, there's duplication, and also there's sometimes hoops that, as you say, a dentist who goes astray often has to face, which causes a lot of unnecessary distress, because the systems aren't there often to, help, either if I may say, you know, see, get them to see the error of their ways, or have the right disciplinary action should it need to come about.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And we're working hard on that as part of our plan for next year. We've challenged them all to come up with a workable solution and implement it in 2018, which really? For regulatory government bodies is the equivalent to us as tomorrow. So it will mean that they'll have to move quickly, change the legislation, etc. So, and we keep on and on at them in the most annoying way in order to affect change when we see and when we think that change, that the current system is wrong.
Yes, I mean, obviously, the General Dental Council have their, what should we say, their remit to say that, and I'll put it very crudely, that they're there to protect the public against dentists or the profession.
Yes.
And I think even that as a stance possibly should be modified, you know, so that there's not this slight, what I'll call adversarial sort of, what should we say, statement about their function.
Yeah, definitely. We, when they introduced that, we challenged it and we failed. And they continue on with it, and it's dentistry used to be self-governing, and the system worked very well. But in the 21st century, things need to be very, very transparent, and all the healthcare regulators were asked to put the patient first. So that's what they do, and I'd say in the last 5-6 years, they've been a little overzealous with that, and have made many mistakes, and they're trying to correct them as best they can now. There's new management in there, and they're working hard to repair their relationship with the profession. They're working hard to continue to protect the public, but in a way that's appropriate and works with the dentists, as opposed to just watching over them with an eagle eye and bringing down very heavy sentences for very light misdemeanor offences, which is what has happened for several years now.
And this doesn't help to in terms of creating an atmosphere of what I would call defensiveness in the way that we deliver treatment to patients.
Oh, indeed. And defensive has caused great problems this year. Anecdotally, because I haven't collected all the facts together yet, because a lot of them are not out there, there was 5 or 6%, we believe, drop in the number of treatments done in the last financial year, 2016-2017, which means that there could be 5 or 6% less budget for NHS dentistry in the next year, which isn't good for patients, isn't good for dentists, it's not good for anyone at all.
This is
defensive dentistry.
That's really slightly depressing from the point of view that that it's a system that is starting to almost dictate the type of treatments we have to do, or what we feel comfortable in doing, where we have such a large team of very skilled professionals, and really there should be a little bit more what I'll call laissez-faire over treatments, because otherwise we'll be in a similar situation as, say, for example, America, where everyone's looking at having either lawyers to defend you or lawyers to sue you, you know, which I think we really has never really been quite as imminent as possibly we are at the moment.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And our country is very litigious. I think it's certainly up there with the United States. And according to our indemnity insurance providers, we're right up there. Level with the States, maybe even higher with the States when it comes to litigation. So all this is being worked on, you know, that we're going in a positive direction. The litigation is reducing. The General Dental Council are being much more pragmatic and understanding about the cases that are brought before them. I have to look at, is a case genuine negligence on the part of the dentist, or is it just bad at doing paperwork? And quite often people who, dentists have been struck off for a couple of years, which can have devastating effects on family and income, etc., for just being bad at paperwork, which isn't quite right. So we're working on it. There are positive things happening with the General Dental Council, and the hope is that they continue and we'll get back to a situation which is acceptable for all parties.
And it's great that we've got people like your good self who are there to look out for our sort of, what should we say, overall and overarching sort of structure to dentistry, because I think that you would agree that we are a very, very fragmented profession, partly because of the way we work.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Dentists are all in silos, which means that getting them together for a united voice to defend themselves is almost impossible, and it's been definitely taken advantage of by several of the regulatory bodies, and we're on their case. We like fair and reasonable, and we push for fair and reasonable, and we give people a hard time, and we stick microphones in their faces, and we do proper tough reporting when it's needed to ensure that they're fair and reasonable with dentists, freeing them up to be able to look after patients as best they can.
Yes, and I think that is the key theme, isn't it, really? That because I think that there really isn't possibly a dentist that practices who doesn't want to do their best for their patients.
Exactly.
And therefore, exactly. And also that's with the rest of the team, the hygienists, the therapists, the nurses. And it's a shame that we do end up, as you say, not only defensive, but also having tiers of sort of administration as well as compliance, which a lot of it, I feel, as you say, is not only duplicated, but really, of course, there are things which, in fact, have taken place in the last 20 years where there's been definite improvements. But I think that we always need to challenge the fact that really that balance between what I will call risk-benefit, and that is something which I sincerely believe not only applies to explaining to patients treatments and the risk and benefits of having a treatment, but also within the actual, literally, the surgery and practice environment.
Yes, for sure. For sure. And we have a golden view of how dentistry should be delivered and received by the patient. And when we, by legislation, moving away from our golden view of the dentist-patient relationship, then we work hard to point this out to people who can make change and to ask them to change it.
Yes, and obviously, because really we talked about the Department of Health being still almost a major player within dentistry,
yes.
Do you feel there's any changes at the top that might well help bring about this golden age?
Well, we have, that's a hard one to answer with a definite yes or no. So there have been changes there, but that's not to say that the old guard were not moving in the right direction. We have a new chief dental officer at the NHS England, Sarah Hurley, and they have a new way of working at the at NHS England too, where they're much more inclusive of other departments, because we know that bad oral health and gum disease can be linked to HIV, diabetes, cardiovascular issues. We know that smoking can be caught in dental practice, perhaps sometimes earlier than it can be caught in the doctor's surgery. So all these different departments are working with each other to try and get messages of education out to practices to pass on to patients. And so the coordinated approach of NHS England, that also known as the Department of Health, is beginning to deliver results in that people are linked together. One that we're pushing in 2018 is why all under 3-year-old children are not registered with the dentist automatically, like they have to register with the doctor. We're not sure that that's quite right. So we'll be campaigning on that, and it's been well received by NHS England. And this new dental contract, which involves capitation, which is a fee paid per patient, a little bit like the doctors have, and it also involves loads of oral health education. We think that's a great way forward. They can't quite make it work yet, but we really hope that they do make it work, and it's introduced and it works for both patients who are represented by the NHS, and it also works for the dentists.
Julian, that is really great, because this is exactly what the integrated dentist is all about. The show is really about, and the reason we call it integrated is because we feel that we can't regard dentistry as a complete isolation to the other health professions that are around us. And I think if you remember that at one time the General Dental Council was part of the General Medical Council.
Yes, I do remember.
And sometimes I'm thinking, should there be a closer link between the two, especially when you bring up, as you absolutely correctly suggest, or you actually advise, that, of course, you know, the mouth is so important to overall health.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't know.
Well, they moved apart.
Yes.
They moved apart, Brian, and I think that they should move a little closer together going forward. And they are looking to do that for sure.
Yes, well, this is great because obviously you are in that position where not only can you use influence, but also you actually feed back this information, which I'm sure is what both dentists and the dental profession want to hear, but frankly also the public, because I think sometimes they really haven't got any idea of how the structure works. Which then feeds down to really, frankly, what treatment they end up getting.
Yeah, definitely. So definitely patient education needs to improve. And I think the better informed they are, the more that they'll demand a better system for them. And we can just keep working on it and keep working on it.
Yes, I'm really pleased that I've heard about the fact they're taking the three-year-olds to be registered, or hopefully they will, because in my last book I looked at the figures and printed them about the amount of tooth decay in the six and unders, and we were looking at something like 38% of children with some form of disease in England, 46% in Scotland, and 52% in Wales, which means that these poor children are, at the age of 6 years old, are already having to suffer dental disease and the consequences, possibly for the rest of their lives, simply because they've not either had access to a dentist or they've not had any education from the parental point of view.
Yeah, definitely. And we need to work on that. I've got first-hand experience. Just had a baby, and little fella's 10 weeks old now, and after 6 weeks he's forced to register and have a checkup with an NHS doctor. And the system works really well in that you're hassled, because I didn't do it immediately, hassled, called up, and chased for you to get this appointment, to get to the doctor. And I think if we had the same kind of pressure from the system for dentistry, I believe that these figures that you've quoted for the six and unders would really drop. And it is very, very concerning, very worrying, the levels of decayed, missing or filled teeth in these under sixes. And it's just absolutely not necessary. And the whole point of this preventive approach should be, its primary target should be the children, and then build it up from there.
I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly that, and even from the economic point of view, if you can just get these children through possibly the first 10, 12 years of their lives without really any tooth decay, the savings to the country is enormous.
Mm. Well, we both know that the statistics show that if a child gets into its teens without having any fillings, it could carry right on for another 2-3 decades without any fillings. It's just those early years are very pivotal.
And I think you say it's a combination of, yes, education, but how do you deliver that education? But if you have a system, just like you were describing about registering with a medical doctor, then look at registering with a dentist, and then you know, there would be a two-way sort of, what should we say, interchange between the young baby child, young child visiting the dentist, almost being, I won't say coerced, but certainly being heavily persuaded to go, and then the parents can actually pick up the education that would come with that initial introduction.
Exactly. And to add to that, getting hassled through the system tells the parents that the system, i.e. the country, i.e. the government, which represents the public, believes that this oral health message and oral hygiene is really important. So people would take it a lot more seriously if we were being told by the entire NHS that it's important to register with a dentist.
Absolutely. Julian, I think we're both in our separate ways singing from the same hymn sheet.
Yes.
And all I can say really is power to your elbow, and keep please crusading on our behalf, because it is essential that we hopefully work with these authorities to actually make change.
Good, thank you. Well, we certainly will do. It's a reason for getting up in the morning for me, for sure. It's a long crusade. I don't expect to win every time, but a few wins here and there makes it worthwhile and keeps me going, for sure.
No, that's absolutely. Julian, I really thank you for your time with me to talk about what I believe is a passion of yours, and really, you know, just keep it going. And I do hope that your young family flourish from the new system.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks again, Julian. Thank you.
All right.